When is a nuclear-free zone not a nuclear-free zone? When the U.S. Navy gets a pass. Nuclear-free zones were originally multinational agreements to prohibit nuclear weapons from certain regions, such as Antarctica in Latin America. Then, in the 1980s, a movement arose of municipal nuclear-free zones, where citizen initiatives or political leadership in at least 200 jurisdictions in the United States and abroad formally banned nuclear weapons activity from their boundaries. While largely symbolic, nuclear-free zones were unmistakable expressions of public opposition to the nuclear arms race then at its height. As the slogan goes, think globally, act locally. In February 1981, the Hawaii County Council, that's the Big Island, unanimously resolved to prohibit nuclear materials from entering the county. But the annual International Festival of the Pacific each year invited a U.S. naval warship, often nuclear-capable, to visit the civilian harbor at Hilo, the Big Island's largest city. Despite the inevitable protests, the county took no enforcement action. By the summer of 1983, local peace activist Jim Albertini had had enough. If the county wouldn't enforce the ordinance, he would, and promised to block the next Navy port call. Festival sponsors pushed the council to exempt the Navy from the ordinance just days before the frigate USS Owlette, a submarine hunter potentially armed with nuclear depth charges, was due to arrive. The Coast Guard declared a martial law safety zone around the vessels. Amidst the hoopla of hundreds gathered on the docks as the warship sailed into Hilo Bay, Jim Albertini, Jim Snyder, and Warren Weinman dived in and swam into its path. Treading water, they waved their hands, signaling the ship to stop. The Coast Guard soon pulled them from the bay and they were charged with a felony. Eventually, they stood trial before visiting federal judge Spencer Williams, a 29-year Navy veteran. He forbid the defendants to speak about nuclear weapons and nuclear-free zones. When confusion over the wording of the charges led the jury to ask, "What is the charge verbatim?" attorneys suggested they be given a copy of the 3-page indictment. "I don't care what the jury wants, they'll get what I give them," he said, and he sent the jury a single sentence, knowingly and willfully violating a Coast Guard safety zone. The men were quickly convicted. Albertini, the alleged ringleader, got a 3-year prison sentence from Judge Williams on the day before he returned to his regular bench on the mainland. Addressing the court, Jim said, "Our action was a restrained, nonviolent, symbolic effort to uphold the spirit, if not the letter, of Hawaii County's nuclear-free ordinance. I had no illusions of using my body to create a physical counterforce to the physical force of nuclear weapons. On the contrary, the objective of the human blockade was to offer a symbolic response to nuclear weapons from the spiritual depths of our souls. Soul force versus nuclear force. The symbolic blockade was undertaken only after all other good faith efforts to avert a confrontation and uphold the nuclear-free ordinance were ignored." A month later, the local federal judge sentenced Weinman to a 2-year suspended prison sentence, community service, a $5,000 fine, and probation. Jim Snyder was not fined, but served 3 months in jail, plus probation and community service. Albertini was ordered to surrender on August 5th. Public outcry, including from local Catholic and Episcopal bishops, led to a brief stay before he was ordered to turn himself in at Boron Federal Prison Camp in California's Mojave Desert on August 30th. So the day before, Jim took a commercial flight to Los Angeles, then another to Bakersfield, where he caught a bus and arrived at a desert crossroads 6 miles from the prison on the morning he was due. He'd been told to ring the prison and they'd send someone to pick him up. But when he called, Jim was told a ride wasn't available and he should just take a walk. Meanwhile, back in Hawaii, the government phoned Albertini's home that very morning to let him know the appeals court had again reversed itself and stayed the sentence. Arriving at the prison after a 6-mile summer hike in the hot, high desert, Jim was told they didn't want him yet and he should just go home. He resolved not to surrender stateside again. More than 2 years later, the short arm of the law finally caught up with him at home in Hawaii, where he turned himself in. And after a brief stay in a Hawaii state prison, Uncle Sam flew Jim to the federal prison in Lompoc, California. That summer, Felice and I took our two young children to California and went to visit Jim in prison. We had camped the night before at the nearby Montaña de Oro State Park, where posted signs warned how to evacuate if we heard sirens due to an accident at the nearby Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. We couldn't help but wonder during our long wait in the prison visiting room, was there a plan to evacuate the prisoners? Eventually, a guard came out to inform us that Jim had been denied our visit for some cruel reason. He was released early on parole after serving just 1 year of his sentence, but for the next decade, he had to get court permission to travel away from Hawaii Island. 35 years later, while house-sitting on the Big Island, Felice and I finally got to meet Jim as guests at his Malu Aina farm, his home in the rainforest near Hilo. He continues to campaign for a nuclear-free Hawaii. This has been Jack Coenjapa for Nuclear Hot Seat, with a story of maritime resistance from the archives of the Nuclear Resistor.